Hello and welcome to The Right Idea, where we discuss the people, policy, and politics that drive Texas. I'm your host, Brian Phillips. I'm the Chief Communications Officer at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. And with me, as always, is our Vice President of Research, Derek Cohen. Derek, we have a special episode. There's a lot going on in Texas right now, making national news. What do you think is going on?
Well, obviously we're here to talk on this particular episode about the incidents going on campus, the campuses, I should say, across the state.
Six blocks from here where we're recording right now?
Absolutely. But I would say that the experience that we're having here in Texas, while still alarming, is nowhere near as bad as they're having in New York, California, and the other
states.
That's
right. Making national news, of course, are all of the campus protests, the protesters who are pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas, anti-Israel, whatever it is, however you want to describe it. I'll throw it all out there so I don't get yelled at on Twitter. But this is a huge issue in Texas, and so we decided that we've got some folks who are friendly here at the Texas Public Policy Foundation who are doing fantastic work, fantastic coverage, particularly on social media, bringing you all of the breaking news right when it's happening. And that is our friends over at the Texas Horn. And with us today is Garrett Blizzard. He is the editor-in-chief at the Texas Horn. Garrett, thank you so much for taking the time, taking you out of your very busy time of editing and covering all of these issues for being here with us today.
Well, thank you for having me, Brian.
Okay, so let's just jump right into the current events. Let's take people through. I mean, it's making national news. There was like a split screen between, you know, Columbia, which is kind of ground zero for where all these protests have been happening, and then what was going on last week and then Monday again at the University of Texas. And so let's just take it for the people. Let's just, the protests started last Wednesday. They were trying to build encampments and all those kinds of things, which are illegal on campus. They were told not to do that. I'll let you characterize kind of what happened after Wednesday, but they were essentially removed. They all came back on Monday, and there was more of the same. So there was more video of the students and a lot of non-students, which we'll get into, being removed as well. And so it's, you know, a lot of people have seen kind of the conflict side of things, but you've had reporters right there in the middle of it the whole time. So would you take our audience kind of through your lens of what you all saw and how you're covering it at the Texas Horn?
Certainly. So, as you said, on Wednesday, April 24th, the Palestine Solidarity Committee, which is the pro-Palestine organization at UT Austin, organized a walkout. And at this walkout, students are going to walk out of class, meet at Gregory Gymnasium, right there on Speedway, which is the main road on campus. Mm-hmm. And students gathered, and they all collected on Speedway. Numbers that I've seen have been around 500 students, or 500 people were there, because as you mentioned, there were a lot of non-students at this protest as well. And they all gathered up on Speedway, calling for the University of Texas to divest from Israel. And what this means is they want the university to essentially cut off all ties, all business ties with anyone that has any sort of business with Israel. Hmm. And They're calling for to divest from Israel, and a large collection of people gathered on Speedway, and then, as you also mentioned, they're trying to build an encampment on the South Lawn, on the South Mall, right there in front of the tower, in between the tower and the Capitol, the little mm-hmm. mall there. And in fact, the university sent out a letter the day of the protest, saying they were trying to contact the Palestine Solidarity Committee, telling them that they could not do this because the Palestine Solidarity Committee explicitly stated that they were trying to, their words not mine, join their comrades at Columbia, trying to build an encampment, trying to disrupt activities going on. This is finals week, so it's a very inconvenient time for myself and for many students and for our reporters, because we all have finals mm-hmm. we're trying to work on. But essentially, you know, they clashed with the police. The police got them off Speedway. They went to the South Lawn. And from there, they set up canopies and blankets, trying to make some form of encampment on the lawn. More law enforcement came in, broke it up. Many arrests were made. I believe numbers I've seen, about 55 arrests were made on the 24th, mm-hmm. and about 26 of those people were not affiliated with the university.
And that area, the South Lawn, also known as the Six Pack, is sacrosanct on UT campus. I'm a Longhorn, a very, very proud Longhorn. And that area is where people go to study, to be outside, to be with their fellow, you know, members, to be a part of the bar. It really is sort of the epicenter of the community of the 40 acres. It literally is right underneath that iconic main building and the main tower right there at UT campus. So this, they didn't just pick someplace next to the football stadium where there was some land where they could camp. They picked probably the most important piece of real estate on the entire campus.
For sure. And we've seen, especially recently, given the other protests that have gone on. So after that Wednesday, the protesters gathered. Actually, initially on that Thursday, it was actually going to be a protest against the university's response to SB 17 and the layoffs that have happened. Mm-hmm. But they technically actually postponed that and ceded the space to the Palestinians for them to protest. So Thursday had a protest, and this past Monday, we'll get into that later, but they also had another protest that was actually far more aggressive because they actually did form an encampment. But it definitely is a, you know, this wasn't a random spot they pick. It is definitely to disrupt the daily business of students in the university. And I've had professors say that they're trying to move, you know, the location of our final exams because I have a lot of classes in the six pack. And they're like, well, you know, we can't really have our exams in these buildings if there's going to be a lot of noise and a lot of disruption going on.
And a lot of people saying death to Israel is coming in through the windows.
Yes.
I mean, I imagine that that's pretty intimidating for a lot of folks that are they're trying to take finals in that area.
For sure, for sure. And we've heard from some Jewish students that they're very concerned about what's been going on. And, of course, the response from the students has been very negative towards police response and the response from the university and the response from Jay Hartzell. We, in fact, members of the faculty have sent out a letter of no confidence for Jay Hartzell, mm-hmm. calling for him to resign. Students are calling for him to resign. So many students are quite upset with police response.
Is that the general feeling on campus? Do you feel like the average student looks at that and says something different should have happened here? And then blames the administrative response to what's going on. Are they more sympathetic to the cause? I guess I don't.
Yeah, I would say that most students really have no stake in the whole fight. They don't really know what's going on. But I would say that they probably do lean more sympathetic to the students and less sympathetic to the administration. Of course, we've seen on social media, a lot of UT-affiliated social media, like students, coming out very critical of the university.
Mm-hmm.
And we have seen... And in fact, in my classes, because we had classes the day after the protest, and that was actually the last day of classes, that Thursday after the Wednesday protest. And this, of course, would be a day that you try to wrap up what you've been learning. Mm-hmm. But in some of my classes, we spent the entire time talking about the protest and how we thought about the protest and how people were feeling about the protest. And in some of my classes, some students who were involved in the protest or who weren't involved initially but got involved after the response on Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
Were talking about how awful the response from law enforcement was, how awful the response from Governor Abbott was. And so I'd say that a lot of students definitely are more sympathetic to
Derek,
the protest.
I want to bring you in here on this just to back up a little bit from this kind of the 30,000 foot level on the response, mm-hmm. right? Which is, you know, you have, and we don't need to go through all the details, but there was some efforts made on the part of the administration to stop them from doing this because they announced that they were going to do something illegal. From, you know, from that perspective, like, what are the rules? What are the laws that govern, you know, this and that the police are carrying? I mean, they're trying to enforce the law. Can you walk people kind of through what's going on?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that, Brian, because much like everyone else on the internet, I am now a First Amendment expert and authority.
Legal expert on trespassing law?
Yeah, but I mean, actually, it is something I have spent a decent amount of time on long prior to. And the issue...
Well, criminal justice is definitely one of your... You ran the criminal justice here at
TVDF. I think the nexus between what is going on in the criminal justice system is rather evident at the moment.
Right.
But if you essentially look, so, you know, especially large institutions, and this has been promulgated by what used to be the Foundation for oh shoot, I forgot Friars acronym now, mm-hmm. but obviously they're the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression these days. But if you look at what they highlight, it's basically the does an individual have a right to free speech on campus, you know, with reasonable and workable time, place, and manner restrictions, right? Like, for example, is Cincinnati, where I came from, we had, you know, we were one of the I think we got to yellow light status by the time I graduated, but we had a really restrictive prior authorization needed postage stamp size space that you could exercise your free speech rights in the main green. So that's obviously towards one way. The other way is letting things just go absolutely unchecked, that letting somebody have a protest outside your dorm, let's say, at 3 a.m, making all sorts of noise and stuff like that, preventing people from something where it's actually, you know, disturbing and harassment. Mm-hmm. And so striking a balance at a public institution is somewhere by trying to drive down the fairway between those two rows of trees, mm-hmm. right? And so the university had said that the university said, this is what is permitted. These are our time, place, manner restrictions, and then it had the time that dispersal was necessary by. You know, any attempt to circumvent this or to set up a permanent encampment will be dealt with. And I think you needn't look further than the actual experience at Columbia, at UCLA, at, you know, California Institute of Airplane Design and Paper Airplanes and Origami or whatever it is. But all these places where they did get a foothold, where the protesters did get a foothold, did start an encampment, it didn't stop there. It wasn't like, oh, we're just doing an encampment. It was, oh, we're doing an encampment. Oh, now we're, you know, cordoning off areas from Jewish students or Zionist students. We're cordoning off, we're occupying a building if it's Columbia.
And vandalizing it and all kinds of things.
Yeah, vandalizing. And so if you look at it in terms of the response, the initial parameters, absolutely acceptable. The actual response was within the bounds of the law enforcement authority, was within that bounds to not allow that encampment to take hold. It was absolutely permissible. Now, the behavior on some of these protesters outside, I know that gets conspiratorial, it says outside agitators, but I mean, the numbers are the numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, the actual, coming from both UT comms and the clerk of courts in Travis County, we're seeing that there are a lot of outside people that had nothing to do with the university that are now coming here and protesting. And to let that sort of fifth column behavior actually be happening in our publicly funded institutions, Jay Hartzell was 100% right responding to it the way he did. Now, people are saying, well, what about the pepper spraying and things like that? This is what things people need to realize about protesting is when you protest like this, if there are people in your midst that are acting aggressively and violently, there is basically one way you can address all that. And like, yes, people probably got pepper sprayed that weren't doing anything warranting of pepper spraying as a side effect of somebody who was, or standing next to somebody who was. But at the end of the day, you can't take that out of the toolbox because people are intermingling. The people that are, you know, throwing things at cops and
well, in the case of the pepper spray, it was literally people obstructing justice. They were stopping the bus full of arrested people from actually getting out of there.
But all that to say is, at the end of the day, the response and the trajectory that we've seen on these encampments in other states completely warrant the response that was given.
The free speech argument is basically the one that the protesters are using. I won't say hiding behind, but they're using. And is there no discussion of the First Amendment is of course sacrosanct as well, but it's not I can do whatever I want. You know, they're not Ron Swanson in the park. You know, with their permit that says I can do what I want. You know, and that there are limitations. May not be the right word, but there's certainly guide rails on that, and that I think you pointed to the one on Thursday. There was a protest last Thursday where they literally were in the public square right underneath of the main building, hundreds of people there with bullhorns saying whatever they wanted to say, you know, no matter how anti-Israel was or not. They were allowed their hours of free speech. The difference is there was no encampments. There was no public, you know, they weren't setting up, you know, this foothold on the South Mall. Not even, there wasn't even any police presence there at all. There was much less remove them. So is there some understanding that at least the protesters know the difference between freedom of speech and exercising freedom of speech versus what they're doing with the encampments, or is it all conflated?
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, the protest on Thursday was very peaceful, and there was certainly not the same level of law enforcement presence as there was on Monday or there was last Wednesday. And furthermore, as the university has pointed out in press releases, it's not like this is the first pro-Palestinian protest that has happened at UT. There have been, I believe they've said, there have been 13 pro-Palestinian events that have taken place on campus this year. And, you know, the Palestinian Solidarity Committee, they often protest, you know, the Jewish block party that happens every year. They're usually always out there doing something. That
Whoa, I got to correct you. They're anti-Israel's decision-making, not anti-Jew. That's sarcastic.
That's the spin.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah.
By the way, how do I get invited to this party? Anyway, go ahead.
I think you just show up. I think you just show up.
I never had that in college. We didn't have open block parties.
But yeah, so, and to follow up on what Derek made, a point that he made earlier, the response by the university, and I think some conservatives are really going down the wrong path in a lot of these arguments by making it all about anti-Semitism. While many of the things that have been said these protests are in fact anti-Semitic, and arguably it's actually more anti-West, I think. In fact, you see that at many universities they're tearing down the American flag, replacing it with a Palestinian flag. They're anti-cop. You see there's some overlap with DEI. A lot of these really, the classic oppressor Marxist dynamic going on here in these protests. But the response by the university and by law enforcement wasn't good because what was said was anti-Semitic or awful. Like those things are wrong and that shouldn't happen. But you can say
anti-Semitic things.
Yes, you can say that stuff. The response was good. Because the protesters explicitly stated, and they tried to do this on Monday, set up an encampment. They were harassing university employees. The university said that there were baseball-sized rocks strategically placed in the encampment. There were tools. They had chains with tables to surround their encampment.
Build a wall, perhaps?
Set up a border of sorts. but the response was good because the protesters were trying to set up an encampment, they're trying to disrupt the university, they're trying to intimidate students and staff, and as has been shown through the Texas Horns reporting and from statements by the university, they have thrown stuff at the police, they have tried to obstruct justice, prevent arrests from being made, and they have in fact been violent at times, some of them at least.
And, and these rules existed before October 7th. They certainly existed before all of these these protests started taking place. And the administration, according to their account, conveyed all of this. They communicated all of this to them and said, what you're about to do is illegal. And, you know, I hate to kind of take people down the path here, but, you know, when you're trespassing, right, you're in a place where you're not legally allowed to be. You've been asked to leave, you've been asked to disperse, and you're refusing to do so. There's really no other option at that point than to legally and legitimately forcibly remove somebody. So it's going to literally take a physical nature of sorts to actually physically remove somebody. And yet they're turning that into, oh, they're beating me. And there, which of course there was, well, I should ask you, did you see any evidence of any of the police officers using excessive force? Or I don't know if that's something you would characterize, but certainly from the videos that I've seen that you guys have posted and all of that, there was certainly something of a physical nature with them pulling people out because they're trespassing and they're refusing to leave. But did you see any evidence or have any video or anything of the cops doing anything?
Yeah, I certainly can't speak to every arrest made because I didn't see every arrest made. Sure. And I think it really depends really on who you ask about excessive force. If you ask the protesters, they would say, oh, absolutely, excessive force was taken because force was taken.
Yeah.
Because they were arrested, they were zip-tied, and they were hauled off to jail.
But what would you do if someone was sitting in your house and they were trespassing in your house and you call the cops? Do you expect the cops to sit there and reason with them about, you know, not being in your house?
Well, I think in their mind legally? they would probably say they probably wouldn't even call the cops to begin with. I mean, they're so anti-cop, but
they'd have to start with a land acknowledgement and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, these are
get the pronouns. All
yeah,
that,
I mean, these
sure
are
you
these are many of these students. Somebody. Many of these students are very Marxist in nature, and so, like, what they would do, I have no idea. They probably would say that, oh well, you know, welcome right. to my home, you know.
But let's, I mean, so let's be clear about what the clear plan is here. And this is not something because we've uncovered, you know, something on the internet or whatever, some conspiracy theory. We're seeing what's happening at these other universities. And what happens is they are, in an effort to de-escalate, they're essentially ignored and they're allowed, Derek, to put up these shanty towns, right? Because that's what gives them the leverage for the demands that they will make later. And while some of the demands are just preposterous in terms of divesting and all that, like universities are not going to do that, we've now seen at Northwestern University where they did make demands, and now Northwestern, in order to just get them to leave, which they should be legally required to do anyway, just to get them to leave, are now capitulating to this massive investment in bringing, you know, Palestinian faculty over and Palestinian students over, and essentially institutionalizing some of this at their university, which they have no right to demand in the first place. And it's all as a result of Northwestern allowing them to camp there and to set foot there and to set the, you know, set, as you said, to have a foothold in this. They're now using this as leverage. It looks like the University of Texas is saying, we're not going to let you get anywhere near that.
Well, and that's, you know, we have the old, you know, the old Rudyard Kipling quote about never paying the Dane geld because they're going to come back looking for more. You know, I think the more Reaganite conception of that is the you never negotiate with terrorists, or in this case, terrorist sympathizers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, because that's the thing. There's never enough. Like, it's not like you only need to divest, like, the minute Colombia cuts all ties to Israel or Israeli companies or companies that have business in Israel, that everything goes back to the status quo. It'll never be like that. That is not in the Marxist doctrine. You know, it's, again, it's take the, they'll take the inches they can, but they're looking for that mile. Mm-hmm. They will never back down. And that's why I, you know, wholeheartedly support the response from President Hartzell and the administration, because if you let them get that toehold, it's only the battle. It's like a ratchet. It never goes backwards.
That's right.
And never let that ground seat.
Tom Lindsay, who is our resident expert on higher education here, said something eerie to me the other day. He said, even going back to the riots of the 1960s and all of that, and following campus protests up until this point, he said, unfortunately, Brian, I've never seen them lose. They always win in some respect, whether it's getting some concessions that weren't even part of the initial demands for doing things like, you know, just getting up and leaving. He said, I've never seen them lose. And so I want to talk to you a little bit about that, Gary, about the faculty response. You mentioned this letter, this vote of no confidence. You know, what kind of teeth does that really have? You know, 500 faculty sounds like a lot, but at a place like Texas where you have over 2,000 faculty,
it's not even one fifth.
Maybe it is, maybe it's not. I think to the average person, it does. How is that playing out, and do you think that's going to have any effect on what the administration does?
Yeah, I don't think it has a lot of teeth. I don't think that the university is really going to give much of an inch on that line. I think it emboldens students. I think students see, like the student protesters, they see this as a win for them, like, oh, the faculty are on our side.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really see much traction being made with that. I mean, that could change, but now, I don't really see that.
So let's say there's a vote of no confidence. Is that... I mean, that's just like the equivalent of a blog post with people's signatures or something? Like, what is that?
I actually don't even really know how a vote of no confidence works at UT. I don't know how they would go about doing that.
So far,
it's just like essentially like a petition.
Right.
With their names on it.
Which we know how, you know, how effective those things are.
Which I'd like to point out is, you know, keep in mind, this is all organized through the AAUP, the collective bargaining entity in most states for college professors. Mm-hmm. AAUP, a... collateral organization of AFT.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they just early last night have been shotgunning basically to all faculty, whether research faculty or adjunct faculty, trying to get drum up more support for this letter. But like I mentioned, they don't even have one, you know, nobody would look at the faculty at UT and go, man, that is, it's basically Liberty University South, right?
Right.
Nobody's saying that. But even at UT, they're only able to get 500 members of various attenuated affiliation to sign on to that.
Mm-hmm.
The faculty, let me just put it this way. The inmates do not get to run the asylum. And they can quit. They can not like the laws that the legislature passed through SB 17. They can go somewhere else. I know there was a huge garment-rending and teeth-gnashing piece in the Texas Tribune after 17 passed that we're losing our landscape. You know, we have one of the foremost landscape architecture professors at A&M who left. And, you know, I don't know where we'll... I'm sure that'll keep them from winning another SEC championship. But I have no idea where, like, people... And under any conceptualization of higher education, think that the tail should be wagging the dog like mm-hmm. that.
So what? So starting with today and looking forward, Garrett, you know, where does this go? Right, you know, as we speak, there were reports this morning that there was going to be another attempt at the encampment. Right, so we've already discussed. No free speech violations are happening because they're more than welcome to go to the middle of campus every single day, hundreds of them at a time, and say whatever they want to say. But they're choosing not to do that. They want the encampment. They and all that it brings with it. And there was reports today that they were going to go try and set up another encampment today on the South Lawn. Where is that? Are they grouping as we speak right now?
Yeah, so last I heard, that actually has been postponed to this upcoming Sunday, May the 5th. I haven't heard any other word about that. That's just like a recent thing this morning.
Mm-hmm. Is that because the administration is trying to work out a deal with them, or do you have any idea why they...
I'm not too sure. I've heard issues with the weather as being a potential reason, but I haven't really heard anything beyond that. But to your point about where this goes...
We will not be intimidated, but we don't want to get rained on. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
nobody likes being wet.
I mean, jeez.
But to your question, where this goes... Honestly, I'm not too sure. I mean, they have been very persistent in trying to get this encampment started.
Mm-hmm.
I read in one of the posts from the Palestine Solidarity Committee, they're trying to like regroup and rethink their strategy,
mm-hmm.
essentially, about how to approach this. And yesterday, they had some events on the lawn, but it was like not an encampment. They just kind of had a little circle,
mm-hmm.
singing songs and talking about Palestine and whatnot, but...
the teach-ins or whatever?
Teaching people about the region and Palestine and the right. conflict and all that.
Mm-hmm.
There definitely have been concerns from students that I've talked to that about graduation coming up, about will they try to disrupt any commencement ceremonies, the graduation ceremonies. I haven't heard anything beyond, you know, speculation and concern, but I imagine at our graduation ceremonies and commencements there will be a heightened security and preventions taken to...
And you're one of those graduates.
I am.
That's expecting to walk the stage and have everything that you've earned the last 4 years right there, and this may disrupt that.
Yeah, no, it's quite funny because in conversations I've had with other seniors, the parallels between, you know, 2024 and 2020 are quite similar. I mean, you know, we graduated high school in 2020 in the middle of the COVID pandemic.
Yep.
Many of our graduations were canceled or put online. Luckily for me, I went to a very small rural school, so our graduation in the class was so small, we had it outside. But for other students, they didn't get a graduation.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is some concern that, or worry that, oh, well, it's 2020 all over again. We're going to have a graduation canceled because Columbia, they've moved their classes online, and there was a college in California that flat out canceled their graduation mm-hmm. ceremonies. So there is some concern about that.
And while some colleges do have their graduations in venues like Sam Bass Hall and other places, or the Irwin Center when it was still there, there is a commencement for all students, which is right there again. It's completely right outside, right underneath the iconic main building, where anybody could walk up with a sign and start screaming with a bullhorn and be disruptive. So there's real concern that could happen, right?
Yeah. For sure.
All right. So going forward, so they've moved the protest from today until May or to May 5th because they don't want to get rained on. What about going forward? Is there, I mean, now it's interesting that it seems like they're planning all this out in the open. I mean, you said you're able to access the Facebook posts and the various social media posts and things like that, and you're monitoring all this. I mean, that seems to at least give the upper hand, I don't know, to law enforcement so they can know when these things are going to happen. But does there seem to be any, understanding that like this kind of thing can't go on, you know, day after day, that there's got to be some kind of resolution to this at some point? At least on the part of the protesters, or
yeah, I'm not too sure. I haven't really spoken with many protesters mm-hmm. or those involved with the Palestine Solidarity Committee. I mean, as we've discussed, this is a very sort of Marxist-oriented organization. Mm-hmm. They believe in a revolution, and they think that what is going on is something that they can't just simply concede. Like it is, you know, they argue the atrocities going on in Gaza. They say that, you know, we must divest. We must, you know, we must protest. We must have the revolution, so to speak.
Yeah.
So will this stop? I mean, I certainly hope so. I think many students want it to end.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's finals week, and, you know, we're student reporters, we're student journalists. We have exams and final papers. So for us, it's quite inconvenient for us to take the time away from studying to actually cover the protests.
Right.
And so we always kind of have like a big giant sigh whenever we hear that, oh, they're having another protest.
Yeah.
Because, oh, that means we got to go out there and take more videos.
And now you
got to
work on Sunday when you were planning on, you know, celebrating Star Wars all weekend or something.
Yeah.
all right. So I want to get to a couple other issues too. One of, you know, a lot of people are making the connection to DEI on this, and that DEI, especially as it's been permeated the college campuses over the last 5 to 10 years, that has been kind of an incubation, kind of a fomenting of this kind of activity on campus. Texas, particularly the University of Texas, has taken the lead in banning these programs at all public universities. There's been a lot of controversy about how Texas in particular, University of Texas, has done this. Maybe they've gone even farther than what the law would necessarily stipulate. Do you see a connection, being on campus, do you see a connection between DEI and what's going on there now?
Well, they certainly run in the same circles. There definitely is some overlap, as I mentioned earlier. The protest
they're
on...
They're not married, but they date?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm not going to go out and characterize that everyone who supports DEI also supports Palestine and vice versa, but there's definitely overlap. Mm-hmm. But as I mentioned, on the protest on Thursday, initially it was a protest against the university's response to SB 17, the layoffs that have happened as a result of the DEI ban. The common argument you hear is that it was over-compliance. They went beyond what they were required to do. And it was a group of faculty, and I think it was a public employees union. I'm blanking the actual name.
SEIU.
Yeah, yeah. They were like... Mm-hmm. getting together, forming this protest.
Or TSEU, sorry.
And then, of course, after Wednesday, the Palestinian Solidarity Committee said that we're also going to have a walkout at the exact same time, at the exact same location.
Hmm. Coincidence.
Yeah, yeah, very, very coincidental. So there's definitely overlap. There's definitely overlap. Mm-hmm. And the same people who are upset about, you know, the response to the Palestinian protest are the same people who were upset about the layoffs.
Mm-hmm. Derek, from your perspective on the connection with DEI, Texas did take some very aggressive and strong steps to eliminating all DEI. There's been efforts to subvert that, of course, that we've chatted about on this show before. Do you think that Texas has done enough, and will it have an effect to stop these kinds of protests from, or this kind of organization? I won't say it stopped the protests. Again, this is a free speech issue, but the kind of thing that ends up being what we're seeing at Columbia. Do you think that that law has an effect on that, or that, you know, a second round, another DEI ban 2.0 is going to be necessary to do that?
I think tangentially it probably had some effect, insofar as there's at least 50 or 60 fewer people that would have definitely been out there holding signs if that was what they seen as their vocation or avocation. But, I mean, to be honest with you, Texas did about all it could. I mean, we got to define what Texas, you know, the legislature has done about all it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Who the responsibility that this belongs to now is with, you know, the administration at UT and specifically the Board of Regents. And these are people that have been trusted by the governor to actually run the business of the University of Texas at Austin. Mm-hmm. If they have reached a point where the anthropology department, and I'm naming them specifically because they are one of the largest agitators here, them and the English department, when it comes to this kind of, we'll just say, behavior. If they want to say that these are so necessary to keeping our spirit of free inquiry that we just have to let these adults behave as children, then that's going to be a decision that they're going to have to leave with. What we can see is that these gubernatorial appointees and those appointed in the future by Governor Abbott or any future governor, they're going to have a real... a real clarity on what they feel the mission of higher education is. And because for so often, you know, nobody's like it's not like one of these, you know, massive sponsored research programs where you have a department just brings in federal money or whatever the case might be and then keeps its own lights on, and you kind of lose, you know, control of the dog at that point. No, anthropology is not one of those departments. It is just a department out there to really promulgate this kind of Marxist ideology. And I don't say that as, you know, like right wing AM radio talking point. Literally, that's what, I mean, class and conflict is what they teach. Mm-hmm. And that really has, I would say, no bearing on any sort of Western academic inquiry. If they want to do this at a private school that sets its own regents, sets its own board, whatever the case might be, that's fine. But my question to the regents and the administration is, why should the Texas taxpayer or the permanent university fund that's topped off by Texas resources, why should that be employed in the thrall of these particular viewpoints that are, to call them fringe would be to elevate them? Mm-hmm.
Garrett, I want to talk to you a little bit about, we have a couple minutes left on the show. I want to talk to you a little bit about your organization, because it's not, you know, it's not your typical student newspaper. You are unapologetically approach things from a conservative standpoint. That was the purpose of creating the Texas Horn, I guess, 3 or 4 years ago. And you've been the editor-in-chief now for almost a year. What's that been like, holding your flag up and say, at a place like University of Texas at Austin, which is decidedly left-leaning, what is that like holding your flag up every day and identifying yourself as a conservative and then going out and doing, you know, the business of news? Do you feel like you face challenges that other reporters or other news organizations might not?
Yeah, so to give some background, the Texas Horn is UT Austin's award-winning conservative student publication. We're part of the Collegiate Network, which is through the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, and they set up various conservative papers around the country. And we've been around since 2021, and I've been editor-in-chief for almost a year now. And we definitely have seen an uptick in terms of views, in terms of followers on social media. Mm-hmm. Since the protests, honestly, the protests have been fantastic for our organization. We have grown tremendously in terms of visibility, in terms of people who know who we are.
Mm-hmm. Clicks love chaos.
Yes. and to get to your question, like, to be a conservative publication at UT, the main publication, the Daily Texan, paid for through, university money. They are, the establishment paper. They tend to be left-leaning. In the past, they were far more adversarial to conservatives. I've heard stories of conservatives being openly denied positions to write for them. I've read op-eds by the former editor-in-chief, actually, from a few years ago, outright attacking conservative students. Now, to give them credit, in recent years, they've done a better job at bringing in more conservative voices. Mm-hmm. But even still, I don't think it's quite sufficient. And so when we go out and report, we don't get like harassed or anything. I mean, we don't have press badges or, T-shirts to identify, like, oh, we're the Texas Horn, we're the conservative paper. We're just out there taking videos, taking photos. People definitely know who we are, though. People at the Daily Texan know who we are. Mm-hmm. People in the student government know who we are. The university knows who we are. So, I mean, it's great because being a conservative paper at a liberal left-leaning university, there's a lot to report on. So there's a lot
that doesn't get reported.
Yes.
What about faculty? Have you ever had any issues with faculty? They're denying requests for comment or requests for interviews or anything like that?
No, we haven't had any issues with faculty. In fact, the people at the Salem Center are actually quite friendly with us, and they're, I think, like a little more. I don't know if it's correct to say they're right-leaning, but they're definitely more
centrist, I think would be fair.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, they're definitely friendly to us. but no professors have been outright adversarial to us. Mm-hmm. People that tend to give us most problems are like the left-wing organizations that we report on, and student government. Student government's incredibly secretive.
But you repeat yourself.
Yes, exactly. The student government, we've been trying to, not to divulge any, too many details because we're still sort of investigating things. But a student government is honestly, I think, legislative action should be taken against student governments at these universities, at these public universities. Mm. They get paid through by the university, by tuition dollars, taxpayer dollars. Essentially, these student governments, the ones at UT, the ones I can speak to, UT Austin, These essentially serve as I guess, means by which these very radical progressive leftists can have a little pretend fake government and pass little fake bills to, you know, virtue signal, to, you know, advance these very far left ideas. Many of them, student government has been very much against SB 17 and the DEI ban.
Has anything come of that, or is this just all cosplay for eventually getting to be state legislatures or something?
It's definitely cosplaying. Like, this student government is not—it's not serious. It's not legitimate in my eyes. I've been asking the question: why does this exist? Why do we have student governments? Why do we have a little fake government for people to waste their time with?
I remember we had elections, and it was like a big deal on campus for about a week. Everybody put up their signs.
And to go further on this point, we've been looking a lot into the budget for student government, because this past election cycle, there was a conservative ticket that ran. And they ran on budget transparency. And a point they made was that not only is this a far-left institution that's, you know, full of petty tyrants and, you know, people with a little fake government, but they're also getting paid. There's stipends for the president, the vice president, numerous governmental officials in the student government that are up to, like, $5,000. Like, thousands of dollars going to students. Now, what's interesting is, if like a member of student government saw this interview, they'd probably be like, oh, that's not true, that's not the complete budget, which was the point that the candidates made in that election. And the Daily Texan, they write a little profile on all the candidates, and they're like, well, we can't endorse the conservative candidates because they're spreading misinformation about the budget, because according to the university, the numbers they cited are incomplete. Now, you would think that the Daily Texan would do the due diligence as reporters to say, hey, wait a minute, the student government's saying that this is the incomplete budget. Where's the complete budget?
Right.
And that's what we're trying to find. And it's been very difficult. The numbers, which they say that the stipends and the amount they're actually appropriating, that's not the correct number. So is there more money? Yeah. Are they spending more?
Thanks for validating that there's the questions to be asked.
Yeah, yeah. So we're currently investigating that, looking into that. And it's been a lot of trouble because they don't respond to emails. They don't have links. It's very hard to find links to meetings. Very hard to actually find the budget. I had to submit a Public Information Act request to actually get like little small bits of information about the student government budget.
Derek, doesn't sound too different from current public. Although the legislature, I mean, don't the actual state reps make like $6,000 a year?
$7,200.
So these kids are making as much as.
But Garrett's trying to find out what that per diem is, because, you know.
Yeah. Exactly.
But allow me to yes and what Brian said though, with your coverage specifically of the protests. Is I really likened the reporting and what I saw coming out of the Horn to what we see from, say, our friends over at the Texan News, right? And it's not that, even though they're just trying to be straight down the fairway, and even though they might make some decisions that they consider editorially as conservative, they're not open. You know, they just want to run a good. They want to run a good railroad. Mm-hmm. Y'all are openly conservative, but I noticed almost no difference between the way you guys were covering the protests and they were. And for those of you who watch the show, know that that's high praise.
Mm-hmm. We have Brad Johnson on all the time.
Yeah, so just wanted to thank you for that.
Well, that's what happens when you just report the facts and whenever you just take the videos and just say, this is what's happening. And I would point out that the Texan has been a huge inspiration for the people of the Texas Horn. I will state that I'm a former intern for the Texan. Connie and Brad and Mackenzie and Rob, the great people.
Shout out 5-year anniversary.
Yes. Definitely check out their podcast. It's their podcast episode on the 5-year anniversary.
That's a competition here. Come on.
We can't eat our own, you know.
we love competition here at TVPF. Well, this has been really great. Garrett, I know this is kind of a last minute thing. We wanted to come in and give us some perspective from being on the ground right there in the middle of the protest. You guys are doing fantastic work, fantastic coverage. It's daily a must read, especially now that all this national news is being made. Hopefully, you'll graduate from our little podcast to Fox News someday and maybe get on there and discuss all these big issues that are happening there at the University of Texas. So really appreciate you being on today.
Well, thank you, Brian, and thank you, Derek, for having me. It was a great pleasure to talk about the Horn today.
Absolutely. All right. And so thank you for indulging us in this special edition of The Right Idea. As we like to say, do good and risk the consequences. We'll see you next time.